Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the February 17 edition of Commodity Week. Soybeans have taken the lead in the marketplace. Can that commodity ride weather problems in South America, a fresh round of export news to China, and the growing ideas the U.S. will need more acres of the oilseed to fulfill demand to, well, the $13 futures price? We'll ask that and many more questions today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Elaine Cubb of the ARC Group out of Lincoln, Nebraska. Our panelists in studio today include Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois, and Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson from Champaign, Illinois.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Well, let's open today's discussion, Bill Mayer, with this question. At the top, I outlined a few fundamental reasons for supporting a higher soybean price. Those are already in place. Is there a reason for old and or new crop soybean futures, say, to test $13?
Well, I think that there probably is. We're not that far away from that. And I guess my reason would be, Todd, if I go back, and I did this today as I was preparing for some stuff, go back and look at December's WASDE report, supply and demand report, and then compare it to the one that we had last week. And the USDA has the bean numbers in South America down about 250 million bushels, but yet they have the exports from the United States actually down about 25 million. So I guess I think that somebody's going to have to pick up that slack for the exports that are going to not be coming out of South America the way it looks right now. And that's probably the United States. So our carry out probably needs to come down some.
Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson.
And I think also when you look at the damage that was done to some of the loadout facilities down in Brazil and some of the other things that are going on in Argentina, it definitely supports some higher move. And you talked about old crop, new crop, both. When you look at old crop, the ratio between old crop corn and beans still remains below 2, which would say to you, you know, there should be a higher price yet in beans or a lower price in corn. Well, it doesn't seem to be coming. So I think that we have a lot of reason to believe we can hit $13. When you look at new crop, you know, the old contract high in new crop is $14. If we continue to have two more weeks or three more weeks of dry weather down in Brazil, I think that we could see new crop beans try and push their way up toward that $13 level, too. When you talk with Dr. Cordonnier, he said that the big problem in, like, Paraná, which is one of the larger states down there that they have, is they planted extremely early maturing beans because last year they had a frost in June. And so the maturing beans came in, and they were hit with 52 days of no rain and extreme heat. So, you know, USDA has not really picked up on that number yet.
And Pete Manhart.
I think the new crop, besides what everybody's thrown out there, is that we expect less acres of beans. So that would be in there in the new crop. And I think economic news from around the world has been buoyed up in the last week so that we feel like the numbers on exports should go up and the usage in the world should continue to be really good on those beans. So I think both have the possibility. I've seen as high as 13, 40 to 50 as an estimate on both old and new.
Here's how the soybeans traded in Chicago at the CME Group for the week. Remember, we give you the day trade and the overnight. Open outcry and electronic. The high in the nearby March at $12.73 and a quarter on the week. The low at $12.32. March settled 38.5 cents higher this Friday than it did the previous at $12.67.5. And November beans at $12.62 finished up 22.5 cents. We had a Chinese delegation in the United States this week. They did sign some contracts. There was some specification that was put in place. Anything more to come of it than what we've seen?
No, I mean, I guess I think the trade probably expected that the Chinese are going to buy some soybeans. This was one of the largest purchases they'd ever made during a delegation like this. I just wanted to go back to what Pete said there for a minute, and that's the fact that on the acreage, I think that we're seeing that the listeners need to look again going back to the middle of December. We've seen corn go up about 25 cents since the middle of December. Beans have gone up about $1.41. That ratio's went from 2.0 basically to 2.2 something. And I think we're trying to get some more bean acres planted here, it looks to me like.
Okay, since you all want to talk about acres, we didn't think we were going to have a battle for acreage until just recently, because the numbers didn't look like that, right? And now we're in the midst of trying to maybe garner some new acres for soybeans?
Well, I think that's the case, and I think there's also the case that if we plant too many acres of corn, they're worried about corn usage due to ethanol and our corn exports, which are, you know, right at well, they're ahead of what USDA said we're going to have, but if you grow too many more acres of corn, that drives that corn price down, and we still need beans for the world, and China's the big one, and they're going to continue to buy a huge percentage of our beans.
Jackie, on planted acreage, is there a reason, and I guess I'm thinking about all the things that are happening, so prevent plant, all those sorts of things that are available, CRP. What are the reasons for beans to rally and not to rally in order to attract acres? And I guess the question really is, does it have to, or is there simply just enough acres available?
Well, I think that, you know, from an availability standpoint, there's going to be some more beans that are come out of the south if they get decent weather down there. But at this point in time, they don't have as much rain as they need. I think that beans are going to rally for a number of reasons. There's a reason that they can rally primarily because, of course, China, which takes 67% of our beans, is still in there buying. The dollar is still at a really good level, and so is the freight rate. So, you know, those things would all support a better level. When it comes to beans also, I'm not sure that the trade necessarily buys the carryout number that the USDA has in here. And when you see the trend at the world level, you know, this 60 million metric tons we dropped to this last month is probably going to go down at least another 2 to maybe even 4 million metric tons. And so I think from that standpoint, we have a lot of support. On the other side, what could cause a problem? Well, I can see a number of problems that could exist. One would be Iran. And, you know, this would be another reason for fellows out there, or people out there in the audience who are listening. You have to make sure that you've got your downside covered. I don't care what you're doing, because if Iran comes in and closes the Straits of Hormuz, today we saw $103 on crude. We could see $120, $130, $140. That'll take the wind out of the sails of any kind of bouncing back from a recession. And so I don't think it makes a difference if we have reasons for it to go higher. I think what you've got to do at this point in time is you have to make sure you've got some kind of floor in place to protect yourself in case something does happen.
Old and new crop?
Old and new crop, okay. Both.
Same for you?
Yeah, I think so. I think that I don't know that we know the answer to whether beans need to rally more than what they already have as far as getting the acres that they need. That a lot of that's going to depend on the spring. If we go in here and we have a real good spring and start putting the corn in the ground fast, I think maybe the beans still need to come in there and change that ratio some more.
I agree on this covering the downside risk, because if, let's say, we're all euphoric about Europe and Greece, and how many times have we seen that in the last 8 months, that one day it's solved and the next day it's worse, and that could easily drive stuff right back down, because they're our number one. We export tons to Europe, and so does China, and if that goes south, the whole world's economy is hurting.
One red flag that's out there is the freight rate. The Baltic freight rate, and it's really just falling off the board, and that's usually a good sign of economic activity.
Oh, how far did it go?
I'm not sure where it's actually at this evening here, but or this afternoon, but it's an indicator that we're seeing some slowdown in economic activity.
Right. You know, and most of the time when that does happen, a lot of times it'll support our commodity side, our grain side, because it makes it, it what it really does is it makes it easier for China and places like that to buy from us rather than from South America. But at the same time, it isn't a good economic indicator. And, one thing that I think our listeners sometimes think is when we talk like this, they think that we're negative of the market, that we're bears, that we're everything else. That's not the case at all. I'm very positive of the market, but we have to manage risk. And managing risk means that you use some type of a strategy. I like puts myself.
Yeah, I like, beans at $12 cash and over for new and old. I would be trying to lock in some kind of a strategy to lock in at least $12, either at the elevator or with puts on the board.
Can I come back to the Baltic freight rate for just a second, because we heard two different things, relatively speaking, and I think they're actually probably both right. So, Jackie, you told me that when it gets cheap enough, it's good, because that means we'll probably be able to move commodities easily. But when it gets really cheap, like it did in 07, if I remember correctly, and it was just worthless, it meant we simply didn't have any economic activity, and it was just bad. And the reason that it was really low was nobody wanted it. Freight,
yeah,
right?
There's definitely two signals there that's giving. But I guess I look at from just a commodity standpoint in general, as we're moving through this period of time here in the next 30 days or so, that's probably our biggest potential negative out here is the economic activity and the global activity around the world. It sounds like we've kind of gotten the European thing possibly looking the right direction at this point, but, that's been something that's changed every other day.
Yeah, I think that, Pete hit it right on the head. One day it looks good and the next day it doesn't look good. And the reality is, when you look at Greece, how tiny Greece is and the impact that it's had on our grain prices, Greece has a GDP that's six times less than the state of California. And so you say to yourself, wow, what happens if Italy, which has a GDP the same size as California, gets involved? And I think that's what your investors are looking at. They're just saying, we can't really have something major happen to Greece because it might bleed over to Italy.
So for the first time in probably 4 months, we've blown through the front of the show talking about soybeans rather than corn. Let's put some other numbers out there. Wheat futures for the week. I'll just give you the change on it. 644, up 14 from Friday to Friday. In the March, July, it's 659 3/4, 11 1/4 higher. Pick up some of the cattle and livestock numbers. February live cattle, 128.60, up $46.65. March feeders at 158.42 1/2, up $4.80. And the April lean hogs at $90.37 1/2, up 207 1/2. March corn, 646 3/4 on its high for the week. The low at $6.21 3/4. Settled a dime higher at $6.41 3/4. The December at $5.68 1/4, up 8 1/2 cents. Beans led, but corn didn't do too bad for the week.
No, really, corn did pretty well, and I think that this 650 area, obviously, on the March corn is an area of resistance. We're going to try it again. I have pretty high confidence in that. If we can get through that and break through that level, I think we can go up into that 675 area, possibly, on the March corn. New crop, I think the January high at 597 is a good target area to be looking at. If you haven't got any sales made, I'd probably look at something in the 575-580 area on Dease corn. But if you have made sales and are looking to make the next one, I think that 595 area is a good target.
And corn's really been solidly supported by export sales this week. Wow. I mean, we came in 10 million bushels over what they ever expected us to. We saw South Korea come in and buy corn again today. And so I think all of that is helping. But the main thing I believe that's helping is just what we were talking about earlier, and that is investors are feeling a little bit better about Europe.
Well, and also you had the Friday or Thursday rumors that China was out to buy corn, and that just drove corn up those 2 days. If you look, we were 25 off the lows at the close on Friday. So, I mean, early in the week was really nasty. Comes in that China's interested or the world is interested in our corn, and I think old crop corn has still got a ways to go. I'm a little worried about new crop corn.
Yeah, corn is interesting, especially for new crop, because if you listen to the analysts, you hear some that are fairly bullish corn. And some that are fairly bearish new crop corn. Where do you all land?
And I think realistically so. I think in the short term here, you just have to look that we probably have a little bit of a sideways trending higher type market. I don't see a lot of fundamentals changing. Longer term, though, you know, assuming that we can get in here and get the crop planted, I think we have a chance to build stocks for the first time in several years. From a strategy standpoint, you know, you got to start with your crop insurance. That's the most efficient way to protect your downside, and then look at getting some, you know, additional sales made.
Well, I think when you look at the big picture, of course, they're expecting an awful lot of acres to be planted. But the reality is there's way too many questions out there to get too aggressive at making sales at this point in time.
And we're approaching the two season, too hot, too cold, too wet, too dry. It's going to be that way somewhere, and that's going to take over from the economic news shortly to drive corn lower or higher.
And we're going to take just a couple of minutes, a different kind of two, and we'll get a little weather forecast in some places and others not. But when we come back, we'll talk with Elaine Cubb at ARC Group. She's in Lincoln, Nebraska. At least that's where they're headquartered. You're listening to Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. This is the February 17 edition of Commodity Week. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media on the land, the Grant University, the University of Illinois. Bill Mayer is in studio with us from Strategic Farm Marketing, Jackie Vakes as well from Stuart Peterson, and Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities. On the phone line this week, Elaine Cubb at the ARC Group. They're headquartered in Lincoln, Nebraska. She is in Omaha today. Elaine grew up on a family farm near Ipswich in South Dakota. She now rents cropland there and assists with the livestock operation. And before joining the ARC Group, she worked as a grain merchandiser for the Schoeller Company, as a future market analyst for DTN as well. You probably read something from her from there. And she now lives in Elkhorn, Nebraska. And I like this. She enjoys travel, fishing, and making wine, taking flying lessons. I hope those last two don't go together very often, Elaine.
Okay. And I've switched to sauerkraut instead of wine now. It's a different kind of fermentation, but that's neither here nor there.
All right. Well, let's talk about weather conditions there. We've heard oftentimes on our shows about dry conditions in your part of the world, in parts of Minnesota, parts of the northwestern areas of Iowa. Can you talk about those conditions and what they're like and if they're really true?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll start on the western edge here in Nebraska, and I'm looking at a 30-day, the rainfall we've had in the past 30 days, and it really isn't that bad here in Nebraska. We've had an inch or two in the eastern half of this state and in Kansas, and still you have farmers that are concerned about this, right, because it is in our nature to be concerned about the upcoming crop. But I would say here in Nebraska and eastern Kansas, you know, there's probably an adequate, at best case scenario, we've got great planting conditions, and then the rain faucet will turn on in June, and we'll have a great crop. But the real concern, like you mentioned, is in that Iowa, Minnesota, eastern Dakota is where the drought monitor says that it is a short-term severe drought, and that is absolutely true. They have not received very much rain. And the really scary thing that makes me sit up and pay attention is I was at a farm show in Des Moines earlier this month, and some guys even that were along the Illinois border in Iowa, so not even in the driest part of Iowa, and they say that it reminds them of 1988, of the winter before 1988. And that really makes you really cautious about hedging to I think is the reason why the market hasn't really built in this risk premium yet is because we have several months, and the entire weather situation could certainly turn around before planting time even gets started. But if that doesn't happen and we start out with these kinds of dry soil conditions, you know, we could really see a real problem.
Elaine, other than the weather, as you look next between now and corn planting time, what do you think the most important thing is for producers to watch out there as they're trying to, you know, do their marketing?
Well, the one thing that I wish, you know, I wish that we had a good way to really predict this would be the U.S. dollar index. And it really seems to be at this point stabilizing, sort of going on a sideways path, and that will help all of these commodity markets, you know, at least trade their own fundamentals. You know, oil is going up for its own reasons, regardless of the fact that the dollar was going up at the same time for the past couple of weeks. And if it stabilizes here and stays on a sideways pattern, then that will allow, you know, the grain, the soybean, and corn prices to reflect their own fundamentals. But if it continues its rebound that it had been having here over the past month, that will challenge. I mean, it will make it harder for us to reach those $6.50 levels or $13 levels.
Elaine, when, you know, I guess you and I are the two cattle lovers here that are talking. So I want to ask you a question about, you know, of course, feed usage is a big thing when it comes to corn. And, you know, we just saw new contract highs in feeder cattle today across all contracts, basically. And live cattle contracts that are high, but not high enough necessarily to be able to encourage a lot more feeding. So give me your view on that.
Well, the live cattle contracts are going to have trouble here because the packers are not running at very high margins. You know, domestically, the retail beef market has been strangely recession-proof. You know, people that are willing to buy beef, the primal cuts and the better grades of beef have really remained resistant throughout this whole recession, and have certainly been coming back as the economy has improved. But nonetheless, the packers don't really get to see very much of that, and they're not going to pass very much of that back through the rest of the supply chain. But they're back. I mean, it's a rock and a hard place. There's just not enough supply there to warrant any lower prices. So, you know, obviously we saw prices shoot up this week, and I don't know, you know, where they're going to top out at, but I don't think there's a whole lot of downside here in any part of the cattle market.
Peter, do you see any changes in planting percentages of corn and beans in your area? Are corn really going to have more acres, blah, 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 or do you think we're going to be about the way we were last year?
Well, What I think is really interesting right now is that you guys have mentioned these corn and soybean, the price ratio between them. And I'm going to be a little contrarian here, and it's totally against my nature because nothing makes me happier than knowing what the statistical, historical average is for a price ratio. You know, 2.1. Let's say we want it to reach 2.1. And here it's already above that for the new crop, that 2.2 that you mentioned. And so you think, you know, gosh, why are they buying so many of these beans at the expense of corn? Are they trying to buy acres? And I think that is what is happening. We're seeing a lot of speculative, their net long position has been rising faster over the past couple of weeks in beans than it has been in corn. They are definitely buying those bean contracts more. But I think there's incredible potential for that whole acreage battle situation to snap back, let's say, when the March planting survey actually comes out. You know, right now, the market seems to be trading these theoretical values that the ag outlook, that the chief economist of USDA is putting out there. And those are theoretical, and I don't think they take into account the fact that we might have a shortage of the right kinds of corn seed that farmers want to plant. And I don't know that it takes into account the fact that farmers are likely to remain constant and consistent with their crop rotations. So, you know, whether or not it's economically motivated for farmers to plant 94 million acres of corn or more and to cut back soybean acres, I don't necessarily think that's going to happen no matter what the battle for acreage, what the price ratio is.
Elaine, we have on our shows been over the last several weeks not been very good at trying to figure out what the feed and residual number is and how it is that so many animal units have managed to be fattened with so little feed. What do you make of that whole side of the equation, and do you have a better view of it from Nebraska than we do in Champaign?
Well, I would like to change the way that they report that, especially with the DDGs, right? You know, there's a good spillover into the ethanol, that 5 billion bushels that's getting used for ethanol, about 37% of that comes back into the feed market, which is really hard to see on the numbers, on the USDA table. You know, that's not really reflected in there very well. So there's more feed being used than you think, and they're coming up with, you know, they can use DDGs. They're being very efficient with their nutrition. To some extent, the feed wheat market is certainly going into the poultry feed rations. So, you know, it's not probably as small of a feed. You know, I don't think that the livestock market is suffering for feed right now, and they're using a pretty constant amount.
Is that to say that you think the stocks number looks correct or close to correct?
I am not surprised that they have not trimmed it more than this yet, because they're just a conservative. I mean, they by nature have to be conservative so that they're not wildly swinging back and forth. But I do think that, yes, there are certainly, you would expect to see some more trims coming up here in the next few months.
Okay, so we've talked about acres, we've talked about the demand some. On your projections, what are you looking at as you put your first 2012 corn and soybean balance sheets together?
Yeah, well, I think that the 94 million acres is probably the good place to start, but I really question using a trend line yield at this point. So, yeah, I'm certainly more bullish than the stocks-to-use ratio that the USDA is bringing, and you guys have mentioned before on the show and today that the export number is likely to increase dramatically as the South American numbers become more realistic. So, yeah, if I was going to change those fundamental numbers, I would definitely be trimming them into a more bullish fashion.
What do you think, Elaine, as far as the fact that they didn't change the carryout in U.S. bean ending stocks this time?
Oh, like I said, I mean they're very conservative, aren't they, about changing foreign production numbers. It's unlikely that we're going to see USDA be the ones that make the first cuts before Brazil's CONAB does, et cetera. You know, so I wasn't too surprised that they didn't change those numbers in February. And February is traditionally a pretty quiet report anyway. And I think they're going to want to see some more fundamental confirmation of a Brazilian harvest before they really start trimming numbers and bringing that back to our own exports and our own stocks to use.
Elaine, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
Elaine Cubb is with the ARC Group. They're in Lincoln, Nebraska. You can find them online at agriskconsulting.net. That's N-E-T. Time for a final word for our folks in studio. We'll start with you, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing.
Well, good news in the crop insurance business. We've got low volatility here this year. That's going to mean some very attractive premiums. We can insure a lot better guarantees because we have the trend-adjusted yields out there. So kind of good news both ways in crop insurance.
Jackie Vex of Stuart Peterson.
One thing we can be certain of, volatility is here to stay, and managing your profit is the other job you've got to do.
And Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities.
If you haven't protected any new crop or sold any, be ready to do that on bounces.
And thank you so much for listening to Commodity Week, a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. We post all of our programming in its entirety to the website not long after it airs on our radio programs, sometimes even before. I'm Todd Gleason.